brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. Tonight we're going to be discussing the NBA draft. And what we'd like to do to start off is just talk about the NBA draft lottery process in general and how it works, how we think that impacts tanking and teams winning and losing, and how it ultimately affects the balance within the league. So, Jason, give me your quick take on the NBA lottery situation.
Well, I find it really hard to understand the process that they go through, like why they do it the way they do it, and why they don't just say, you're the worst team, so you get the first pick in the draft. Now, I understand that might cause more tanking, because if a team is really close to being the worst team, they might just say, I'm just going to completely lose everything because I'm going to get the first pick now and my mission will be accomplished. But I think it's really rough, especially if you look at a team, and I know Sacramento's had some real, real rough times with like their drafting and whatnot, but they've been terrible for, I mean, when was the last time Sacramento was good?
When was the last time they drafted somebody good?
That's the, and I'm not saying that if they picked number one that they would, that would fix all their problems, but I just know that Sacramento has been bad since Peja Stojakovic retired, and that might be 2006.
That's a long time.
2005. So I'm just saying, like, I think that it's a good question to have, like, what should they do? But I don't necessarily know that completely wiping out the lottery is going to fix the problem.
Yeah, I mean, I think the question is I think this is one of the things that you always hear NBA experts and people who are talking back and forth about it come to a discussion about, whether or not you're rewarding teams for being inept, or is there a way to, you know, is there a way to balance it? Why should the worst teams, the teams that are the worst managed, that make the poorest decisions, why should those teams continuously be rewarded with top picks? And like, if you think about Sacramento, or I saw something on the web with Memphis and their picks in the last 10 years where they've drafted just guys that you haven't even heard of them anymore. And does it make sense for those teams that are poorly managed to continue to be at the top and have opportunities to draft, you know, again, potentially great players, and they just keep screwing it up? So it's an interesting way of looking at it, depending upon your perspective. Do you want to have teams that are rewarded for being terrible, or do you want to spread the wealth around? And, you know, you have the concept of the wheel, which I'm sure you're familiar with,
yeah,
where a team there, you just, the teams are all set in groups of six and it rotates through different positions in the draft regardless of what your record is. The idea being there that you're trying to eliminate the tanking prospects. And I think if you do go with the worst record getting the top pick, especially the way things are done today in the NBA with analytics and people understanding that it's very, very difficult to cultivate a superstar in any other way besides getting in the draft, especially if you're not in a major market, that it's just really difficult to say, oh, we're going to reward that those bottom teams with the number one pick, because I think everybody's going to tank. It's just reality.
Yeah, and I think that everyone tanking would make the league terrible. I do agree with that. Like, I have five. You have five teams. Like, you talk about the five teams that are picking the top of the draft. You've got Phoenix. You've got Memphis. You've got Sacramento.
Atlanta.
And I can't remember who's picking five. I think five was a. But anyways.
Oh, Dallas.
Oh, Dallas. Yeah. Okay. So in fairness, Dallas has been pretty good over the last 15 years. Like, you look at them historically, and Atlanta has been good over the last 8 years. Like,
yep.
Just this year was the first year they really were bad. I think last year they were kind of. I think they were
hanging on
yep, for dear life. But like, those two teams, like, theoretically, you know, they had one bad year. And, you know, you could look at, well, maybe they should get best chances of getting the first and second pick because they've been good consistently and they had a bad year. But at the same time, those other teams have been – I mean, and the other team that's really funny is the Knicks. Like, they've been so terrible. Like they're – and I know there's the Phil Jackson thing and the coaching thing, Derek Fisher, Jeff Hornacek. I mean, they're on their third coach in 3 years, right?
You know, and their best player tears his ACL, and, you know, it just – yeah, the Knicks' luck just continues to go south at every turn. And again, how do you reward these teams that have, you know, again, that have had terrible management or terrible owners or just made bad decisions? It's to me, if I was in charge, I would come up with something that would rotate the pick sort of like the wheel, where you didn't tie getting the number one pick to having the worst record. Because I think there's no way, no matter how you rig up the system, that you're not going to encourage the teams that have the best chance of getting a number one pick or getting a high pick not to lose games, because the incentive is just too great. You don't win in the NBA without, you know, at this point, you could even say without two or maybe even three top 15, certainly top 20 players in the league. And the only way to get those players is through the draft, especially if you're in a market where you're not getting marquee free agents to come to Sacramento. You're not getting marquee free agents to come to Milwaukee. It's just not going to happen. Yeah. So you have to be able to draft those guys. And I still think that it's to me, if you disincentivize losing and you take away the idea that the worst teams are going to automatically get those top picks, you at least put everybody competing as hard as they can, because they know that their draft standing isn't changing based on their record.
One last thing on this, and then we'll move on. But what do you think? I know you're a Bill Simmons listener. What do you think about his play-in tournament idea? About possibly that might help eliminate tanking, because teams are going to have to play in a tournament to possibly get into the playoffs at the end of the season.
I like the idea of it I think from a purely entertainment watching basketball standpoint. I don't know how much it would impact whether or not, you know, becoming the eighth seed in the playoffs really moves the needle for a team. If I'm in the Western Conference next year and I've got a chance to move into the playoffs in the eighth seed and I'm going to play Golden State in the first round, I'm not really very excited about the prospects of going 0-4 and then losing a potential top five draft pick in order to do that. So I would say I like the tournament just based on the tournament itself, not as much on the ramifications of what it would do for the draft.
Move it to the midseason then. Yeah. I like the midseason idea. I think that would really, like, the NBA is on such an uptick right now. I think doing something like that would create even more of an
uptick. It'd be interesting, because obviously it's not done in any other, you know, it's never been done.
It would
really
be basically March Madness for the NBA,
yeah,
and that
sure.
would be crazy.
Yeah, it'd be fun. It'd be fun to have a one and done situation in the NBA as opposed to a long series, just to see what that would look like in a tournament setting. Because, you know, we're so used to the series and seeing adjustments that coaches make and this and that. So, I don't know. It's an interesting concept. I think the NBA is going to continue to tweak and work on trying to get it right. And I know one of the things that I think that when you hear again, NBA experts talk, you hear about when you institute something new, there's always ramifications that you don't think about. Even this particular salary cap and the mega salaries that you can give out only to your own players, and it turns out that really nobody wants those because it locks you in, and then you're on this team that you're stuck there for 5 years and you can't get out of it if the team doesn't build around you. And so, you know, those supermax deals, just, you know, I guess Westbrook has one and Curry has one, but otherwise guys are, you know,
signing 1 year contracts with player options for the second year.
Right.
LeBron,
so they can get themselves, yeah, you know, to places that, you know, give them a better chance to win games. So I don't know. Again, it's not going to stay the same way that it is right now. There's going to be tweaks. I don't know if they'll go completely radical, but they'll continue to work on it again to try to avoid as much tanking as is possible.
All right. So let's move into the draft itself. Who do you think is the best player in the draft?
Well, if I was drafting, and again, I don't claim to be a college basketball expert. I've watched much less college basketball than I probably ever have at any point in my life. But just through the reading that I've done and just hearing what people are saying, that whose opinions I respect, it seems like Luka Doncic is the player that makes the most sense in today's NBA, based on A, his age, B, his playing experience over in Europe, and C, the skill set that he brings to the table. I just don't see how a guy with his type of basketball IQ and perimeter skills combined with his size on the perimeter, it just makes too much sense. When you watch Golden State and you watch Houston and you watch Cleveland and you look at how do you match up with those teams, you need those interchangeable 6'6 to 6'9 guys that can do lots of different things out on the floor, and then conversely match up on the other end and guard people. And I think, to me, Luka just makes the most sense as a consensus number one player. And it seemed like that's what was happening up until, you know, 2 weeks ago when all of a sudden DeAndre Ayton jumped up into that number one spot. And so I was surprised by that. If it was me, I think I would take Luka.
I'm pretty much on the same wavelength with you. I think he's definitely right now the best player. He's definitely the most seasoned, I would say. I mean, considering he's played in all those things over in Europe, and I think, you know, it's hard to really gauge college basketball players because they're just playing against college level talent, and a lot of those college level talent is comparatively to the NBA is not good. Whereas Doncic has been playing against NBA professionals over there that have moved over there because they didn't have the opportunities over here. So I definitely think as of now that he's the best player, and I know we kind of talked a little bit beforehand, but I think that Trae Young had, and you and I kind of agreed on this, has the highest ceiling for possibly have the highest ceiling. I think he has the highest ceiling, and I think he could be a star if he's in the right situation and if he has the right attitude. At the same time, as we talked about as well, I think he could be the biggest bust, and you were the one that originally had brought him up as being possibly the biggest bust. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think Trae Young, you know, again, if you compare Luka and Trae Young just in terms of what makes you think they could be great and what makes you think they could be terrible, I'll start with on the Luka side of it. I already talked about, again, his multidimensional skill set and the fact that he's, you know, an experienced player who's played a lot. Against grown men at a young age, and that, I guess, generally would lead you to believe that he's not going to be intimidated by the NBA game and that his game's going to translate. And yet at the same time, I think there's a danger that if you look at the history of wings from European countries.
Darko Milicic.
Rudy Fernandez, who's had a great career in Europe, came to the NBA and just was marginal at best. And I think that's the worry: is what kind of athleticism is Luka going to bring? Is he going to be able to handle playing against NBA level athletes and do the things that he does well in Europe when he's playing against a different caliber of athlete? So I think that's the red flag with him that I would have people worried. And I guess if I was an NBA GM, I'd probably be worried about that too. On the other side, with Trae Young, obviously a guy who can lead the country in scoring and assists in college basketball. Clearly has talent, clearly has an ability to put the ball in the basket, clearly can handle the ball, clearly has court vision. All those are things that are in today's NBA are extremely valuable. And at the same time, he's 6'2", he's pretty small, he's not super strong, he's not the quickest guy in the world, he's not a super athlete. And so those guys, unless you have a completely special skill set, sometimes can struggle. And so I think, again, Trae Young, I could see him 3 years from now being a guy who averages 24 a game and 9 assists. And at the same time, I could see him being a guy that 4 years from now, he's the 12th man on somebody's bench, you know, just looking to hang on and stay in the league. It could go either way.
It's going to depend on what situation he falls into more than anything, right?
I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with, the organization that drafts him, the coach that is put in charge of his development. You know, a lot of times you just get guys who go to the wrong environment and they flounder because they just are not put in the right situation. Or maybe they don't have teammates who show them how to be a pro or how to handle themselves. And just speaking of that, I know I read a quote from Michael Porter Jr. I don't know if you saw it, about how he compared himself to and the last comparison was Tracy McGrady. He said, "I'm a lot like Tracy McGrady, and I have the scoring ability of, I can't remember now, but we'll look it up here as the podcast goes on." But it was just a ridiculous quote in terms of who he was comparing himself to.
Oh, he compared himself to Kevin Durant today.
All right, Kevin Durant, and there was another guy that was in the comparison.
Here, can I read? I'll read the quote.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Right now, I'm a mix of Giannis and KD. You know, I like going to the hole a little more than KD does. I like bumping into people and a little more physical than KD. But also, you know, I like to shoot the ball more than Giannis. So that's what I like to compare myself to. Then also Tracy McGrady. I could compare to him a lot, and I like that one a lot too. You know, those are three amazing players, so it doesn't feel bad to be in the same conversation as them.
All right, so I'm guessing, I don't know who he's having that conversation with. I'm guessing with himself or maybe his parents, because I don't believe anybody's really making those comparisons. But the fact that he's even saying that makes you a little bit worried about his mentality and his makeup. I think it's that would be, to me, that quote right there would be a red flag that would make me want to run the opposite direction if I was a if I was an NBA.
Especially when character issues is one of his big things that people have been saying about him.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I would tend to that quote when I read that earlier today definitely scared me. So I would stay away from Michael Porter Jr. if I was near the top of the draft for sure.
What do you think the Cavs are going to do with the pick? I personally think they might not have a trade, quote unquote, announced, but I think coming into the draft they're going to have some kind of idea they don't know if LeBron is staying or going. You have to think they've had some kind of conversation with him saying, "Hey, if we keep this pick, what players do you like?" Maybe they haven't had that conversation because they sure as heck didn't have that conversation, you know, in years past even, like, because it just hasn't worked that way. But I can't imagine that they're going into this draft tomorrow night, because it is tomorrow night, right?
It is tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night. I can't imagine that they're going to this draft tomorrow night with no LeBron, like, idea whatsoever. You know, ESPN might be saying the LeBron situation hasn't been resolved and they haven't talked to him or not. But I will say, last year you didn't hear a single word about Kyrie wanting out before the draft, and that was obviously done before.
I was working at Kyrie Irving's basketball camp on July 7th, and there was all – they had the hype video for Kyrie and, you know, coming off the title-winning years and, you know, all this whatever, and there was nothing. I mean, there was no talk from him, from anybody there, that he wasn't going to be back.
So maybe they are doing a good job holding this in. Maybe they have had conversations with LeBron. Maybe the Cavs organization knows what LeBron's planning on doing. I'm not saying that they do. But I'm just hypothetically saying maybe they do know what he wants to do. You know, there's been all the trade rumors of them floating the pick. Like, there was one today, Kevin Love and the 8 for Kawhi Leonard. Well, I don't see that working out.
I think Pop likes George Hill. That's one of his guys. I think we could throw George Hill was
his best when he was in San Antonio, right? I mean,
yeah.
But I don't know. I'm a little hesitant on that whole situation.
Here's what I would say. If you're the Cavs right now, either you know – so there's two ways to look at it. Either you know he's coming, you know he's coming back, you know he's leaving, or you don't know anything. So I guess there's three. Two out of those three are at least give you some hope. So I think the Cavs are got to be behind the scenes. They have to be doing everything in their power to be trying to trade – not necessarily trade that pick, but somehow to work a trade to be able to bring in a guy, at least one guy, that could somehow entice LeBron to stay. Okay. And I think that's what they have to be doing. Otherwise, if all you're doing is saying, okay, we're going to just go in and we're going to use this number 8 draft pick on guy X, whatever player it is that you want, that doesn't help you. It doesn't help you keep LeBron. I mean, maybe it does if there's some other move that you can make to bring in a superstar player next to him, and then you use this pick as another guy. But I think you have to be using the pick. You have to be trying to leverage that pick into something that can entice LeBron to stay.
Okay, so it's been reported too. Obviously, Charlotte's kind of going full rebuild now. They traded Dwight Howard today. I don't know if you know that.
I didn't know that.
They traded Dwight Howard to the Brooklyn Nets for Timothy Mozgov, some draft picks, I think, whatever. So there's already been talk that Charlotte's shopping Kemba Walker, and I know we talked about a little bit how Kemba Walker has been kind of linked to Cleveland. But
I would take Kemba Walker if I had to give up very little in order to get Kemba Walker. I'm not opposed to Kemba Walker as a player, but I wouldn't give up anything significant to get Kemba Walker, because to me, again, Kemba Walker doesn't help you reach your goal, which is to beat Golden State, because who in the world can Kemba Walker guard on the Golden State Warriors? He has no chance of guarding anyone on that team.
Okay, so the full trade was Dwight Howard to the Nets for center Timothy Mozgov and 2 second-round picks and a cash. Timothy Mozgov has been passed around like crazy.
The guy's trying to set the record for most teams played on in the shortest amount of time.
Well, Dwight Howard's right there with him, though. Atlanta the year before.
It's frightening how a guy that has that much physical talent and the number of tools that he has, and yet everywhere he goes, people just can't wait to get rid of him.
Dwight Howard is one of two players to average a double-double in his first 14 seasons. The other guy's name is Wilt Chamberlain.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's crazy
that he's been moved. But again, it tells you something about his personality and who he is as a player. And again, it's easy, I think, when you watch basketball, if you understand basketball, to know that there are some guys that you just would want on your team, and there are other guys that, despite what statistics might say, you would just want no part of being on your team. And I think Dwight Howard is a guy that you would clearly, if you're interested in playing winning basketball, championship basketball, you don't want Dwight Howard on your team.
If you want a guy who can win a dunk contest, you want Dwight Howard
on your team. Maybe you want Dwight Howard. If you want somebody that looks good in a tank top, you want Dwight Howard, but you don't want Dwight Howard as a basketball player on your team. So let's go back to if you had to make a call. Let's say the Cavs are not able to trade the pick, but they do have to make a selection at number 8, and there's no trades involved. The teams in front of them kind of stay where they are, and they have to make a pick. If you had to predict, let's do it two ways. Who would you take? And then, two, who do you think the Cavs will have available to them that they can select?
All right. So who I would pick if he's available would be Trae Young. Now, there's talk that he's going to maybe go to Dallas. I've heard Dallas being a rumor location.
I heard Atlanta today.
Oh, did you hear Atlanta?
I heard Atlanta. I mean, but they don't want to take him at 3, I heard. They might want to
move back. Like
trade down or something. Okay. I don't know.
So I would say Trae Young. Would be my pick if he's available at 8. I like Bridges as well, but I don't necessarily know his fit with us, so that he might not be.
I mean, he's a theoretical fit in that, you know, what I've read and what I've heard and what I've seen is, you know, he's a 3-and-D type guy, which again, wings are the type of players that teams are after. So certainly he makes sense if LeBron's back and he can play some minutes and guard some people out on the perimeter. I think he helps you. I agree with you on the Trae Young pick, only because I'd rather, if I'm in the NBA, if I'm in the draft, I'd like to swing for the fences and have an opportunity to get a guy who could be a real difference maker, as opposed to just say, all right, let's just take the average, you know, let's just take this guy and he's going to be a 12 points, 4 rebounds a game player for us as our 8th man. To me, That doesn't do anything for me. I'd rather take the guy who potentially could be great, and yet at the same time, like we talked about earlier, potentially might not turn out to be that type of guy. But at least you have some upside that, wow, this guy has a skill set that if things work out right, you could see where he would fit in on a winning team.
Yeah, ESPN has us taking Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
From Kentucky. I heard a couple people talking about that today.
And to be honest with you, this is the first time I've ever seen his name. I
follow
college basketball a little bit. Like, I don't like follow it religiously, but I've never even heard of this guy. When his physical comps are Sean Livingston and Patrick McCaw, I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's long. He's
7-foot wingspan with a 6'6 height.
So what I heard today in one of the draft things that I was listening to was that he's an excellent defender with long arms, but he can't shoot and he doesn't have an explosive first step. Okay, so he's a point guard who can't shoot, can't get by anybody, really isn't an elite passer. So what is he? He's just a defender. Well, that's not a guy that I want to draft. I'd rather have somebody that can do some things and potentially can turn into a player that's going to be much better than his draft position. And
he's also Canadian, and we know how that worked out last time when they took Anthony Bennett. So
yeah, we don't want any more Canadians. Tristan's Canadian. We've cornered the market on Canadians. I'm good with Canadians. So, and I guess Wiggins is a Canadian too. So
yeah,
he only spent a month with the Cavs though. So
a fake month
with the Cavs, and then he was on his way out the door. So I hope again, if it was me and Trae Young's there, I would like to see him take Trae Young. I'd be okay with Mikal Bridges. Who's the one guy you wouldn't want to see him take?
Porter. We've already talked about it. And I really think that he's going to be available, and that scares me a little bit because I don't think people, especially with his injury, his mouth,
I know. Well, and he was, and here's the thing is, he was coming out of high school, the number one ranked guy in that class, and he was the McDonald's High School All-American Game MVP, and he certainly had a pedigree coming into his first college season that led you to believe that he might be the number one overall pick.
Here's everything you need to know about Michael Porter Jr. His physical comps are Paul George or Sam Decker.
Yeah.
And Paul George, great player. Sam Decker,
borderline NBA player. Borderline NBA player. So I don't know. Porter would scare me. I guess if you went with my old theory that I espoused a few minutes ago of a guy who could potentially have a great upside and also be a bust, I guess Porter might kind of fit that bill. But to me, he seems like a guy, especially after reading some of these quotes, that he seems like a guy I'd want to steer clear of. The other guy that I'd want to steer clear of is Miles Bridges from Michigan State. To me, I look at him and he's got like this squatty type body and he's kind of thick and doesn't seem like he moves that well. And I don't know, he kind of is a three-point shooter, but not really. And he just seems like a guy who doesn't have a position, doesn't really fit any particular spot on the floor. And I don't know, those guys, I just don't think they succeed very often in the
ESPN
NBA.
Has them dropped all the way to 15.
Yeah, I did it early in the process here, him linked to the Cavs a little bit, but haven't heard that recently. Yeah. So I guess my bottom line is, if I had to see who they were going to draft, if Trae Young's available or Mikal Bridges is available, those are the two guys that I'd be pretty happy with if they came out with either one.
And they had to take a pick.
Right. And at the same time, I got to believe that they are working feverishly around the clock to explore every potential avenue of bringing in a player by dealing out that number 8 pick
no
and whatever
sleep
else.
Tonight, Cole
yeah,
Gellman.
Whatever else and whatever else is on their roster. So I don't know. It'll be very, very interesting to see how the Cavs draft situation plays out and to see how the top 10. I mean, it seems like there's a lot more variability this year in terms of what people think could happen, especially with the idea that, again, Luka was the number one prospect for so long. It seemed like months and months and months leading up to it that he was clearly number one and potentially a transcendent player. And all of a sudden now he's dropping from 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 to 6, depending on who you talk to. So, you know, again, I don't know what's true, what's not true. You don't know how much of anything is a smokescreen when it comes to the NBA draft, but seems like he's not going to go number one for sure, which, you know, a month ago, 6 weeks ago, seemed like it would be a total stunner. So somebody's probably going to get lucky.
And you know what's really great is we'll know in 23 hours.
That's
what's,
right.
What's happening.
Exactly.
Essentially, it's 9:30 right now on Wednesday. Essentially, 23 hours from now, you know, the Cavs will basically be on the clock because it's 5 minutes between rounds and the NBA.
5 minutes, which is great. Much better than the NFL draft where, again, it's people that I'd never have heard of and it's 15 minutes. It's brutal to watch the NFL draft. The NBA draft is
The NBA draft is done in one night.
It's so much more interesting. And although I will say it's much less entertaining for me personally now than it was 20 years ago when I knew all the college players much, much better than I know them now. Here you have between players from Europe, between guys that are only in the college for a year, and then I don't follow it nearly as closely as I did. It's much more difficult to follow. It's not nearly as entertaining as it used to be when I knew every guy from pick 1 to pick 60.
That's because you played with some of them, right?
Yeah, probably back in the day, probably played with a few here and there. But regardless of that, it's just when your knowledge isn't as high as it used to be, it takes away some of the entertainment in terms of you having strong opinions about any one player. So I'm excited about seeing what happens with the Cavs. It's going to be a summer of intrigue in the NBA, and the NBA draft is kind of the tip-off to the crazy offseason to come.
I agree. I'm excited to see what happens, and hopefully the Cavs do the right thing. That's all I'm going to say.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens tomorrow night. Probably by the time you listen to this podcast, Jason and I will have been wrong on a number of things, but maybe we'll be right. Who knows? You never can tell. Hopefully you enjoyed our NBA draft preview podcast, and we'll be back with a new episode real soon. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast brought to you by Head Start Basketball.